the night. James trains with Bruce Lee. Mike walks 500 miles, and then he walks 500 more. And our guest reads the mind of a butthead.
James from SorrelPunk.com.
And this is a very knackered couch potato Mike. How are you doing this morning, sir?
I actually feel pretty darn good. Why do you feel so knackered?
Well, because Jeremy Clarkson says, it feels like I walked 1,000 miles.
Yeah, which was 10. We walked 10 miles.
Oh, good God. Yeah, we went to this Greenway in Ashland City yesterday, which used to be a set of railroad tracks. It's actually part of this initiative, the Rails into Trails thing.
Yeah.
Where they turn old railroad tracks into greenways. And we went down and back.
Yeah, it's a down and back.
It's about 5 fucking miles long.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. Walked all the way to the end. James, you said you'd walked it before but never made it to the end.
Yeah, I always, you know, because when you're walking down on a down and back, you got to mentally think, everything I've walked to this point, I have to double.
Yep.
So you have to go back. And usually around the hour mark or so, I'll usually turn around and go back. 30 minutes to an hour, I'll turn around and go back, which we spent at least, 3 hours?
Something like that.
Yeah.
We did it. We did it. We walked the whole damn thing and turned around and walked it all back.
Yeah, which you did. Clap on your back, my friend. You did amazingly well.
Ugh. I was trying. I mean, as long as it was pretty much flat and level, I can walk for very long distances.
Yeah.
It's when you start adding hills and shit into it that I start getting all fucked up.
Yeah. Funny enough, it was your kids that struggled the worst, because they're not 80s kids. They weren't, you know.
Well, still Logan, after over...
He was still hustling.
Yeah, he was still running sprints, yeah. And that was, good God, I want the kids' energy.
Yeah.
Which
is funny, because he would tucker himself out and then have to take a break, and then he'd get up and run some more. It's like, if he just went a steady pace, he could have like just went the whole thing back and down.
Well, you see, my son's not like an antelope; he's more like a cheetah.
Yeah,
he can run. He can run for short distances.
Sprint. Well, to be honest, I'm much fonder of a sprinter physiology and physique than a marathon runner. Like, if you compare, off topic, if you have side by side, you look at a Olympic sprinter and you look at a marathon runner,
mm-hmm.
Which would you rather look like?
Yeah,
the
true.
Marathon runners are like stringy and gangly and look like Skeletor. Feel the wrath of my breakfast burrito. And the marathon runner looks like a jacked ass motherfucker, so.
Okay.
Or the sprinter. Did I say marathon runner? The sprinter.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they know what you mean.
I hope they do.
And speaking of they and jackasses, our good friend Matt and his wife Angela got a very lovely surprise in the mail for me.
I got to have a link. I got to put a link. Linked to me in the YouTube. I'm going to link to them in this show note.
Yeah, so watch out. Follow this link and it'll take you to YouTube. And what will they see when they get there, bro?
Okay, so I have this S Health app on my phone. And I can, you know, like not often, but sometimes I walk so much that it put me in the top 1% of all people using this S Health app. You know, so 140,000 odd steps a week, which I think comes out to 60 plus miles a week that I walk.
Incidentally, on a side note, we had to have done over 20,000 steps yesterday.
We did. Yeah. We did 20,000 plus, which is like 10 miles.
But anyway.
So yeah, he got this app and he started competing with me because he's trying to get, you know, fit and healthy, you know, try to lose some weight so he can, you know.
So he can fit into that dress better.
Yeah, and live longer and stuff, be there, you know, play with his kids. So he started getting some steps up and I was like, you know what? Because we had this little friendly competition. It's like, if you beat me, I'll give you a shout out in the podcast. This is the shout out. Good job, Matt French. You kicked ass.
Yes, you did.
So good job. And besides the shout out, I was going to send you something. And I sort of toyed with the idea. I was like, you know, I got some like product review stuff, leftovers that I could send out. You know, or I've already sent Matt some patches just for free. He has a t-shirt. I'm like, why can I send this motherfucker? And I'm like,
he needs something better than that, though. Something more significant.
More like a bag of dicks.
Yes.
I sent Matt a bag of gummy dicks from Amazon. Which, this is one of the unboxing videos that I was like, when you unbox this, don't have the kids in the room.
Yeah, make sure the kids are not around. They don't need to be witness to this.
No, so him and his wife unboxed it, and his poor wife, like, looks on her face.
Oh, God.
Both of them were like, Matt looked at it, and he was like, fuck, it's a bag of... And, you know, his wife looked at it, and you saw her eyes pop up real big, like, oh, God.
Oh, my... They were giggling the whole damn way through.
Yeah, we watched it, actually, while we were walking back, and we were laughing our asses off.
Oh, my God. He was throwing dicks up in the air and catching them in his mouth. It was priceless. You have to see this video. Everybody has to see this video.
It is, yeah. The link will be in the show notes, so check it out. Have a good laugh. Matt, you're a good sport, buddy.
You really are.
You know what I was saying? I was like, I'm pretty sure Matt would see the humor in this. Like, I don't think he'll get a bag of dicks from me. I'm like, that James Fitzgerald Punk is an asshole. I hate that motherfucker.
Oh, my God. To paraphrase Kevin Smith, you beat James at walking, put a dick in your mouth.
Yeah, but good job, Matt. Good job.
Oh, good. So, what have we got coming up on the show today?
We've got an interview with Jason Pritchard from a Life Well Designed podcast, who is a fucking mind reader. Which, yeah, I agreed to do the interview. You know, I thought it was going to be like a business podcast. And then, like, you know, digging in, researching on him, you know, because I was on his podcast. I'm like, he's a mind reader and, like, an entertainer for 10 years and, like, all this other stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to be a fun chat. And it was.
It really was.
You know, sometimes we have chats with people that are their chats and they're fun and they're, like, fluid and dynamic and not like, so what did you do today? Stuff.
See, we're always watching the clock when we're doing this because, you know, we're trying to keep this under an hour. That never fucking happens, but we always try to. And there's basically two types of ways we do that with an interview. One, we're either watching the clock and go, how are we going to stretch this out?
Yeah.
Or, good God, how are we going to wrap this up?
Yeah.
And yesterday, well, this interview coming up is one of those, we really need to wrap this up, but we don't want to stop going.
Yeah, we had to, like, cut off questions, and it's like, we actually have somewhere to go to walk. We had to go walk. And we were like, man, if we don't actually cut this short and make an effort, this thing will run on for like 3 hours.
It,
like,
really would have.
It could have been a 4-part interview.
Yeah, it really could have. But, you know, enough about talking about the interview. Let's get on with this interview.
Let's dig in.
Yeah, which means handing it over to our tame survival guest. Some say that in his wallet, he somehow has an even bigger wallet. And that despite not having anything to do with it, he won Monday's debates. All we know is he's called Jonathan Pritchard.
I realized, you know, I could be doing a lot more than just making people laugh for a living. I can entertain them and give them the psychological tools I use on stage to use in their own life. So that's why I combined my educational background of design with my experience of mind reading and kind of applied psychology, mush those two together, and that's a Life Well Designed. And then most recently, I started a project called likeamindreader.com. So it's kind of like, you want to learn how to date like a mind reader, you want to learn how to network like a mind reader, blanklikeamindreader.com is where you go, and I'll teach you how to be awesome, basically.
I will have links to that, and I'm going to check that out. I don't know. I kind of have hobby ADD, so I get interested in a lot of weird little things, and then I go full in, and then, you know, I kind of back off. But I can definitely see how, like, that mindset, that mentalist, that mind reader mindset would help you in so many aspects of your normal life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because really, a mentalist is just an expert communicator. That's all it is, because you have to expertly communicate a complete fabrication and lie to a room full of 2,000 people. So for it to work, you have to be able to communicate perfectly. And it leverages the way that people navigate reality and build their experience of what's real, hijack that process to create a reality where mind reading is actually possible, and there's no way out. Because once you buy in, you're locked in for sure. So anytime you have other people involved or beliefs or strategies, any kind of mental process, the psychology of a mind reader can help you, even if it's just for yourself, right? So if you want to improve your relationship with yourself and kind of root out those beliefs you have about yourself that aren't serving you, right? It's not a question of right or wrong. It's how useful are these beliefs to you right now? Oh, they're not? Well, here's a process to help change those, right? So then it's really your fundamental belief structure that you don't even question that governs how you make your choices, and your choices are what governs how your life turns out. So not to put too fine a point on it, but it's the most important work anybody could ever do. And I'm good at it. So, you know, I'm very proud of my humility. It's I'm just doing the Lord's work, you know, just.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was a kind of a bit on mind reading. And I actually want to dig your brain about it in a little bit.
Yeah.
But before that, because I do find that really interesting, which I guess I didn't research you very well when you interviewed me on your podcast. But then, you know, today I had I dug into your history a little bit to be able to have a competent interview, and I'm like, he was a fucking mind reader? How did I miss that?
Yeah, it's actually something I don't lead with too often, especially when I'm interviewing somebody for my own program, because it's not all about me and look how cool I am. But yeah, the mind reader angle is very unique. So that's why I hate that small talk of, so what do you do for a living? Like, I'm a research analyst. I'm a business manager. What do you do? I'm a mind reader. And then we're into the exact same conversation I've had a million times.
Which inevitably is like, okay, read my mind, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the very first reaction.
I know, because I've been sitting here thinking that the whole time since it got brought up.
Right. Well, thank you for not doing that. That's actually in my stage show. That's my favorite joke. That's my absolute favorite joke in the stage show. Some background is it's completely volunteer based, right? I could tell you what I'm thinking, but that is in no way amazing. So it's more impressive if I have volunteers and then tell them what they're thinking, right? That's the hard part. So I have to actively encourage people to volunteer, but comedy shows and comedians have just destroyed the trust of anybody at the show, right? So they're terrified to volunteer because they think I'm going to make them look like an idiot, when my goal is to do the complete opposite. Because if I make the volunteer look like $1 million, suddenly everybody wants to volunteer, and like, that's what I want, right? So it's a very kumbaya kind of experience. Well, about halfway through the show, that's when I do the bit where I go, you know, I love my job. I love everything about my job. I get to travel the world, meet awesome people like you guys, make people laugh. Just I love everything about it, except telling people what I do for a living. Because the instant I say I'm a mind reader, the first thing people say is, read my mind. So I have to laugh like it's the first time I've ever heard that. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
And then I tell them what day they're going to die. Right? Just wham. It's just so out of character and just out of left field. They're like, he was so nice. Oh, that.
Yeah,
he could do that. Oh, that's terrifying. He's a very scary person.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love it.
That reminded me of something, and I know that you have some nerd tendencies like myself. I one time saw in this magazine a Yo Mama contest between the editor of the magazine, Wizard, A Guide to Comics, and Galactus, the Eater of Worlds. And
yeah.
The guy was like, yeah, he's like, Galactus is like, Yo Mama's so fat, she jumped up and got stuck in the sun. And Galactus is like, well, your mother is going to die on June 23rd, 2027 by eating consumed by fire ants. And he was like, oh, that's terrible, Galactus.
Well, you took that too far, man. That is uncalled for.
Yeah. Oh
my God. Yeah.
Before we get way off in the weeds, tell us about a Life Well Designed podcast and blog.
Yeah. So the elevator pitch for that is the design process is – it really just boils down to making choices. That's all it is. Do we use aluminum or stainless steel for this or regular steel? Well, we're designing a cell phone. Steel will interfere with the signal, so let's use aluminum. All right, next choice. And at the end of that decision-making process, you've created this incredibly valuable product that makes your life better, all that kind of fun stuff. Well, the lives we live are the results of the choices that we make. So you're actively designing your life. It's just most people don't take control of that process. So that's why I wanted to help people understand the power of their choices and teach them the design process. So the podcast is designed to have conversations with cool people who aren't living the cookie cutter standard social narrative life, right? Who are kind of off in the weeds, having a great time, not living as a slave to the corporation, all that kind of fun stuff. So it's people who have designed a life that's outside the mainstream. So hopefully the listeners can learn from those conversations and get new ways of thinking about how to make choices, how to make relationships, just kind of how to live better.
And can you define what lifestyle design means to you?
Lifestyle design to me means understanding the importance of making fully aware choices. Like that's really what it is, right? So it's not going, well, which couch would work in this living room best? It's more about how do I see myself? How do I value my choices and my time? How do I learn to provide the most value to the world to create control in my life?
Excellent. Good points. I find that like lifestyle design needs to be taught in school. It's instead of like just taking what life throws at you and like, oh, that's just the way it is, you know. And then one of my pet peeves is when people will like retort something like, must be nice or you're lucky, you know. And it's like luck and like luck has nothing to do with anything. It's all like designed to be that way. And instead of like just being like, well, life just gave me this. No, it's like you can design what you want from life and not just get pooped on by life.
Exactly. My usual response to that is, fuck you. You know, I've worked way too hard. I have given up a lot. My life has cost me so much. And I'm not going to let you get away with just believing, well, you just have a gift for this. No, fuck you. I've worked super hard to build the skills that I have to have to live the life that I do. And if that's how you have to tell yourself, well, he just is gifted that way. And that's your excuse for why your life is shitty. Like you are continuing to not take ownership of the choices that you're making that result in the shitty life you're in the middle of. So I that really, really bothers me, like on a deep personal level, when people are just like, well, you're just gifted that way. Like, no, you don't get to do that. You don't get to put that on me. So yeah, that's a really personal pet peeve of mine.
Yeah. Nothing that any of us do is anything that anyone else can't do. Like, maybe you're like, what was it? Like, anyone can get to like the top 10% of anything, you know, really quick. And I mean, the top 10% is enough to be, you know, a comfortable living.
Right.
It really is. You know, it takes a buttload of, you know, work. You got to hustle. But, you know, getting to that top 10% and pretty much anything, not impossible. Anyone can do that.
So it's telling somebody they're gifted like that. I mean, that's kind of a backhanded insult if you really think about it.
It really is.
I mean, because that's like, oh, what you have is a gift. It was given to you. You don't deserve it. You don't deserve it. You didn't earn the damn thing. You're just lucky that way. It's a backhanded insult.
It really is. Yeah. And that's why I Yeah, I don't let people kind of skate by on that. That's why I usually have that conversation with them. I usually have it in a much more PC fashion. I'm like, oh, no, it's a skill set and anybody can learn it. And yeah, that's because, you know, you can't do anything, right? You can't sprout wings just by wishing for them, right? So that option is not available to you. However, you do have a lot more options available to you right now than you might realize. And the choice of which option to exercise destroys all the other options, right? That's opportunity cost. And each choice will either result in a greater number of options or fewer options out the outcome, right? You do have the option to jump off the top of a building, but that drastically limits available options afterwards, right? So that would be a case where you limit your future options. Or you can spend an hour a day learning or reading, talking to cool people, listening to awesome podcasts. And those ideas that you learn make your options even bigger, right? So that's why it's like that's how powerful your choices are. They create or destroy your options. And most people just prefer to go through life with an external locus of control. They think life happens to them. Woe is me. All these bad things are happening to me, instead of taking ownership and responsibility for the choices that they make and kind of having that internal locus of control. Because that is square one. Until you accept that you are creating your life, everything is going to be happening to you and you're going to be the victim. But people that are successful, who are living awesome lives, realize that they had to take control of their choices and create the life that they've always wanted.
Absolutely. That kind of segues into my next question on what are some benefits of starting an online business? And if you don't take ownership in your life and in your decisions, then you probably shouldn't start an online business because it's not going to do anything.
Right. Yeah. An online business is awesome because it's never been easier to get people to give you their money, right? Used to be you had to show up, trade your time for dollars for the boss, right? Be a slave to a CEO who makes bad decisions, right? And they can fire you on a whim. Who cares? That stability that you think you have going into that job is a complete illusion, right? And if you don't spend time building your own business, building your own way of making money that isn't tied to your time, you're actually the one living the more risky life. Because a lot of people go, man, I can't imagine doing what you do, because the next gig, the next paycheck isn't guaranteed, and that's terrifying. Like, well, I'm actively working and cultivating and exercising the strategies I know that pay on a daily basis. So to me, that's a much more stable existence than working at the job, not doing anything else to create a side hustle, and then you get fired. And then you start thinking about, maybe I should start my own business. Well, now you're 3 years behind, and now you have to go find another job. Like, that's risky. That is incredibly risky to me. So the benefits are being able to control my time, control how I spend it, who I spend it with, and what I do with it. And that is kind of awesome.
It is kind of a lot of awesome. I feel that everybody should have some form of passive income. Like, even if it's a few bucks, it's like, you know, sweet. Like, I was asleep and I got some money in my pocket. Like, that's awesome.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And it doesn't have to be a lot, and it doesn't have to be all in on the newest thing. Right. That I wasted a lot of time chasing my tail that way, going, oh, here's this new thing, let me go do that. Mm-hmm. Right. And having multiple streams of low yield value is still awesome, right? So I still trade my time for dollars, but it's a lot of dollars where I go and do shows. And that's great. And then I started doing corporate consulting and entrepreneurial consulting and just kind of helping people get their head out of the standard social narrative ass and learning how to think about spending time, right, and creating value and that kind of fun stuff. That is still trading my time for dollars, but it's in a much different way than most people do it. So the automated lifestyle gurus who are like, set it up and forget it. You never have to worry about it ever again. But you know what? It's still work. You still have to show up and put in the time, put in the effort to make those systems work. The idea that you're just going to set this thing up once and then retire and never have to get on the computer ever again, that is complete horseshit. And those guys are making money selling people on how they made money. Like, that doesn't actually provide any value. It's a multi-level marketing scam. Mm-hmm. It's just horrible. So
that's essentially, I mean, send me 1999 and I'll send you my book, How to Get People to Send You 1999 for a Book.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. They're not delivering any real actionable value that does anything to affect change in your life other than going, son of a bitch. Right? Yeah. You're like, well, all the suckers that were going to send in 1999 are already done. But what if I wrote a book on how to get people to send me $199? Okay. Since it's more expensive, people will automatically equate it with being more valuable, and therefore I'll get those suckers. Ha ha. And the cycle just continues.
Yes, until you find yourself putting tiny little ads in publications all over the country for no reason whatsoever.
Still the best infomercial of all time.
I hate it. Like, it's deeply troubling to me. Like, that's why I am so focused on helping people create a life of integrity, right? Being able to live and sleep at night and have high value relationships with cool people instead of just being a scummy salesperson that doesn't provide any value for people.
Yeah. To not get the weeds too much. Like, for me, one of the absolute best benefits ever to starting an online business, you know, Survival Punk, it's just making cool friends, you know, fans, you know, like, you have some fans, like, you know, you'll just never really hear from, and you have other fans that'll email you like daily and like, so this is going on, bro, and blah, 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 blah. You know, like, top benefit by far. Like, yeah, money's good, but, you know, creating a cool group of friends, awesome.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that actually is the most valuable resource you have, and that's relationships. And starting your own thing is a great reason to begin building those relationships with amazing people, because it's the relationships with other people, it's the relationships with yourself, relationships with your problems that dictate the quality of the choices that you can make. So yeah, being able to build that amazing community of awesome people and have those high quality relationships is one of the fastest and most effective ways to make your life better.
Absolutely. What were you going to say, Mike?
Well, I was just going to note that I've recently started trying to do my own passive thing, basically. I'm trying to brand myself and make myself famous on YouTube so I can start collecting advertising revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You are hustling and putting out at least one video a week, right?
At least one. I mean, anywhere from 1 to 3 videos. I mean, hell, I've put out 3 videos in one day before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of slacked off a little bit this week, but I've already got like 3 videos lined up to make.
That's awesome.
I'm going to do an unboxing video for a Big Mac later.
Awesome. Tasty. So yeah, for me, it's all a question of pain to glory ratio, right? What's the pain of me doing this versus the glory I'm going to get from it? And for me, video just wasn't it. Like, I didn't figure that out like at all. Like, the time it took me to create a video versus the views I was getting, I was just bummed out. I was like, this is bullshit. But then doing the podcast, it was much easier. People could consume it in a way that was agreeable to them. Just listening while you're commuting is a lot easier than watching a video. So, dude, I haven't cracked that nut at all. I have no insight to help you. Good no, luck. Let me know
I'm
how it
goes out
there.
I'm figuring it out as I go. I'm taking any tip that anybody can give me, and I'm just I'm trying. I've even gone so far as to try to ride on other people's coattails trying to get there. I've been commenting on videos that are like my video with my video.
Yeah. Internet marketing is fun.
The good thing is, I'm not losing anything out of this. I mean, if I'm not making any money yet, but then again, I wasn't making any money off of it before I started. So
True.
I'm working towards something.
So on your podcast that you were just talking about, you've interviewed a lot of successful and interesting people. And you even slummed it with me. So, you know, what are some of the key takeaways you've learned from some of these people? Like a lot of times with successful people, like certain themes seem to like float up to the top. Like you're like, okay, so, you know, a good percentage of everyone does this. Like, what are some of the things that you've heard reoccurring often?
Yeah. Let me see. Believing in yourself, really. Having a good network of cool people, being true to your own voice, not trying to game the system by doing what you think people will want to hear. So that kind of authenticity is really important. On a personal experience for me is that the super successful people don't really have a lot of more insight than what I have. So it's not just the beliefs that matter. It's what you do with them, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is, man, I know all this stuff already. This person is saying the exact same things as three other people have said. So, all right, the mystery isn't in the right mindset and the beliefs. I got those aligned. Now I just got to like put that shit into action and actually do it. So that was kind of the biggest thing for me like a year ago, was realizing, oh, it's not – the princess isn't in another castle. Like I found it. I know what I'm doing. Now let's just go do it.
Yeah. It's like a lot of people will get like sort of paralysis analysis where like they'll spend all their time like on, you know, internet marketing blogs and watching videos on YouTube, but they're not putting anything out. You know,
right. Go create something. Absolutely. Go put something into the world that didn't exist beforehand. And that's how you spend your time.
Yeah. I don't. So between the last time that you and I talked, I got a microphone. That's why I don't sound like crap.
Nice.
And two, just recently, I got on Audible, Gary Vaynerchuk's Crush It book, which I listened to and then pretty much started listening to again right away. Like, that book will light you on fire.
Cool. I haven't listened to it yet, but
if you don't have Audible, go sign up for a free account and download it, and then, you know.
Oh, dude, I get it. I've been on the Audible train for years because that's been my lifesaver on the road. Because sometimes you'll have a late night show, and then immediately, like, you sign autographs, all that kind of fun stuff. Go get in the car, drive the 4 hours back to the airport for your 5 a.m. flight, and then fly, land, drive another 5 hours to the school, and then immediately do an early show. So audiobooks are a lifesaver in a literal fashion for driving around the country. So yeah. Audible is awesome.
Little off topic. What's some of your favorite books to listen to?
I'm either going to win a lot of brownie points or lose a lot of brownie points, but Atlas Shrugged, it's like it's 54 hours long. Like you're not going to listen to it in one sitting, and that's what I love about it. See,
that takes dedication.
Yeah, like when you have a 14-hour drive and you listen to music and the album is over in 45 minutes. Yeah. And then you go, well, I now have 13 hours, 15 minutes left of driving. Let's do this again. It just keeps on reminding you of how much time you have left. But when you get into an engaging narrative, holy crap, the time just disappears.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. With this audience, I'm sure Atlas Shrugged will be a huge, like, everyone's going to love you now. which is awesome. Which is really weird how divisive that book is. Like, people are either like, oh, it's like that one internet meme with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's like, oh, so you listen to Atlas Shrugged, and he's like, he's got a champagne glass up to you. Or people are like, fuck you, Jonathan, you're an asshole now.
Right, like, exactly. What? And yeah, it's most.
That's not fair because Atlas Lives Matter.
Yeah. Oh,
God. Well, the vast majority of people in my. I'm just remembering now, which will automatically be biased, but I can only remember people who didn't like Atlas Shrugged who haven't read the book.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, and, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's because human really, nature to instantly hate something that you have known nothing about.
Right. I mean, because to me,
the vast majority of people protesting, like, back when one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite Kevin Smith movies, Dogma, it was being protested by people haven't seen a damn word of it. I mean, not one second of it. People were just, oh, it's sacrilegious. Meanwhile, the movie's got a rubber monster that's, you know, shit and the least sacrilegious thing you ever want to see.
Right, right. And really, the whole idea boils down to exchange value for value. If you aren't exchanging value for value, you're stealing, or you're allowing someone to steal from you. Like, that's what it boils down to. Like, that's all it is. So if there's anybody that goes, well, you're an asshole for believing in that, like, that who are you going to let steal from you is really what you're saying. Like, that's all it is. So I now know you don't understand how the world works, so I don't value your opinion, and what you have to think about me doesn't matter. So thank you so much for allowing me to understand you so quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually never finished that because my audiobook was corrupt or something, but like I did listen to like, I don't know, probably 20 hours of it. And it was pretty good. And I've read the book, so.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. I'm going back through my library here on my phone right now. So let's see. Kind of in a backwards order, some of the highlights. The Big Leap is an awesome book about upper limit problems and that kind of thing. Napoleon Hill's Outwitting the Devil. That is a phenomenal book. Let me see. A Billion Wicked Thoughts. That's awesome. That is, researchers looked into people's actual search histories to see what it is they're interested in when they want to have some alone time. Right.
Wow.
And then extrapolating the meaning from that instead of self-reporting surveys and all that kind of stuff where people go, wow. Oh yes, I like the normal stuff. Like, not well, that's not what your data says.
No.
So it's really cool. It's really cool. Incognito is cool. That's about the kind of non-conscious part of your awareness and brain and all that kind of fun stuff. So Good They Can't Ignore You. That's a great book. You Are Not So Smart. Another awesome book. Sleights of Mind. Yeah. Present Shock, just all sorts of goodies in there, mixed in with a whole bunch of sci-fi. Yeah.
Nice. I was going to say, before we get off the book topic, if you've not listened to it, and it's one of those things where like every October I listen to like one or two audiobooks, definitely one or two. So my October audiobook listening is The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman and World War Z. Like, those two are definite October hits I got to listen to.
Oh, yeah. The Graveyard Book has been on my radar for a while. World War Z, I love it. And there was a really weird experience. I was living in Austin, Texas at the time, and I was driving to do a show, I think in Florida or something. I had the time to spend, so I love seeing the country that way. Instead of just hopping in a metal tube shoved together with a whole bunch of other assholes, I would rather just be by myself and drive for 30 hours and listen to audiobooks. Yeah. But that's just me. I'm weird. But I was leaving Austin, started World War Z, and there's the segment of the book where the person dumps out in the swampland of Louisiana. And, right, they're talking about Highway 10. I was on Highway 10 in the swampland of Louisiana when they were going through that section of the book. So it was perfect. Really, really cool. I was like, that's neat. So however long it takes from Austin to the swampland of Louisiana is how far into that book it is. But that was just really a neat coincidence.
I love that book with a passion. And I hated the movie with an equal passion. It could have been the greatest zombie movie ever made. And instead, I would not wipe my ass with that movie.
right. Yeah. Well, rarely is it that the movies are better than the books. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head where I love the TV or movie better than the book is the Song of Ice and Fire, right? Like the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Because holy shit, that to me, that was just so needlessly complex and convoluted and over deep. I was just like, you know what? Just show me some naked people on the screen. That's really, I'll be able to recognize the characters much better than paying attention to their names and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Now for me, I had a similar experience, but, mine, I actually enjoyed the movie Forrest Gump a lot better than the original book.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you've ever read the book of Forrest Gump, but it is insanely convoluted with all these extra completely unbelievable experiences. Like he goes into space, crash lands in Africa, is taught chess by a bunch of cannibals.
Yeah, that's no.
At one point, he's stuck inside a Creature from the Black Lagoon costume, wandering around Beverly Hills with a naked Raquel Welch.
What?
He was a professional wrestler called the Dunce.
Oh my God! Yeah, the movie was way better then.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and Lieutenant Dan spent the last half of the book on one of those little flat carts with wheels on it instead of ever getting new legs.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Oh yeah, no, the book was a train wreck.
Yeah.
Well, let's clean this up a little bit.
that was a good job. What are a few elements of an effective mind?
Ooh, a few elements of an effective mind. Oh man, confidence is one, and really confidence comes from the understanding that your choices actually make a difference, because too often people aren't sensitive enough to recognize the impact their choices have, right? They feel like, well, I've tried everything and nothing's different. Well, then the second part of that is, are you actually solving the right problem and being able to understand what the actual issue is? Because if you've tried more than a year to solve an issue and it's still there, you aren't solving the right problem. Mm-hmm. So being able to discern what actually is the root cause of your problems is really important, because then no matter what you do, it's not going to be useful. So putting your choices into action in the right context and for the right reasons is super important too. So I would say those are two biggies for sure.
Because that's like treating the symptoms without curing the disease.
Exactly. Right. Let's just slap a Band-Aid on there and call it cured.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I've noticed also, like, sometimes. Okay. So there's a time and a place for persistence and doggedly going after something, you know, like if you're busting your ass trying to, you know, do your online hustle, you know, it's a grind, you know, you got to put in the hours, but you gotta be able to measure your effort. Like if you are just wasting your time, you know, and you're doing the same thing over and over and over and it's not working, then you probably need to evaluate that and then move on to something new.
Right.
That's what I do, you know?
Yeah. And usually that is a symptom of not having an effective strategy, because if you're just out there trying things by experiment to see what works, it's going to take a lifetime for you to figure it out. Or you can stand on the shoulders of giants, get a coach who has been through what you want to do already and can save you years of that back and forth, of that questioning, is this actually how I should be spending my time? What should I be doing? Well, then that's what a coach does, is catapults your progress by going, here's a system that works, right? Because everybody talks about goal setting and having goals is great, but that's just square one. That isn't even getting you started yet. So what actually gets results are effective strategies. So strategies can take years to implement and put into use, but seeing that they work is all the proof that you need. And the fastest way to do that is to find a coach who can help you do that. Me. So.
Well, see, that's not fair because you're just gifted that way.
Oh, right. Yeah. 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 It comes naturally to me. It just comes naturally. Yeah. But
sorry, that one's been eating a hole in my stomach.
Yeah. But that, but the thing from Western medicine, right? Physical activity, eating properly, getting enough sleep. Those are fantastic at getting your mind right, because everybody feels like they're this little person living in their head, driving this big meat puppet. And that's not how it is. Like, your body's mind is so much smarter than your thinking mind, because there's been so much more evolutionary pressure to keep your body alive and not the mind you're using to drive it very poorly.
Yeah. I just realized we're running actually fairly long on time, because this has been such a fun conversation. So instead of digging into that even more, because yeah, never mind. what are some tricks that you utilize to make a resolution stick?
Ooh, by not making resolutions. That's my number one trick, is to not make a resolution, because you have that emotional baggage that 95% of resolutions don't work. And therefore, you're giving yourself the out of not sticking to it, so that when it's 3 days in and you already messed up, you just go, yeah, well, that's it with resolutions. So instead, I set intentions for the year, and I don't do them on January 1st. My birthday is in January 28th, so I do birthday resolutions, right? So I set my intentions for my birth year. Right. Not the arbitrary January 1st that all the other assholes use. I use my birthday as my new year. I set my intentions for what to do. And you can intend to do something, and you're more likely to stick with it than if you go, OK, I'm going to do this massive change, and it's going to require all these differences and changes in behavior and beliefs all at once. Well, there's no way you're going to affect your internal inertia that drastically when you're drunk on December 31st. Like, that's not going to happen. Right. But if you set an intention to be a better person or to do this thing, you can then intend to do it every day, even if you didn't.
Yeah. Good point. I see you're a January birthday too. How's getting screwed out of Christmas presents treating you?
yeah.
Or birthday presents, I mean. Yeah, it'll be like, my birthday's January the 4th, so I definitely, like, people are like, here's a Christmas present, and this other present is for your birthday in like a week, so.
Oh, right. See, mine's right. December the 5th, so same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Nice. A bunch of winter birthdays. It's like, here's your RC car. Oh, and on your birthday, you get the batteries.
Yeah, that's exactly how it is. I do something similar where I will set resolutions not in January. Usually I've tend to set them in like November. I just arbitrarily, like, it just November seems to be a good time for change. And not eating junk the entire month of November is probably good for your waistline.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But so but that, it's part of it is that you are already exercising control instead of just doing what you think is expected of you. And yeah, that alone is phenomenally powerful.
Yes.
Oh, my man here is he is an expert on exercising control. I'm proud to tell everybody he's over 3 years sober right now.
Oh yeah.
Outstanding.
Yep, just recently celebrated his 3-year soberversary.
Yeah, which at one point, I could not imagine, you know, because I was an alcoholic, obviously, I couldn't imagine not drinking. I'm like, how do you have fun without booze? Like, I don't understand that, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
So.
Oh, it's funny. He took to being sober the way he took to alcohol, which means he is really fucking sober.
Right, right, right. I have an interesting tangent to that if you have time for a side story that doesn't really move the narrative forward at all. But so I'm a mind reader. I'm a mentalist. It's what I do for a living. And during the show, I do this routine where I get the whole room to think of something and then prove it, right? And it's a psychological force is really what it's called. So using language, hand gestures, and positioning, all that kind of fun stuff, it really is subliminal influence. It is under their conscious awareness. And I get them to think of a symbol. And I have that symbol tattooed on my arm. And it's awesome, right? So, like, I'm full in. I'm dedicated. And months go by, and my entertainer friends start setting up this incredibly elaborate prank with me, right? And it's at airports all across the country. It's at restaurants. It's everywhere I go. And I'm just like, this is the most elaborate prank ever, because people – would come up to me at the airport and go, "Hey, are you a friend of Bill's?" And they're like, "No, I don't know why you're asking me that. And this is the seventh time in 2 months that people have asked me that. I have no idea what's going on." Right. And then I would do a show, and then I would go to Chili's because that's the only place open in the armpit of America. And I would sit at the bar, get a drink, and the bartender would be like, "Are you sure?" Yeah. What? Why? He's like, "No, nah, just wonder, man." I'm sure. He's like, "Okay." And then he would give it to me with this look like I had kicked his dog, right? He was just like, "Man, I am so disappointed in you," right? And then I was with a buddy in New York, and he's like, "Hey, congratulations." I say, "Thank you so much." For what? He goes, "For going sober." It's like, "We're in a bar right now. What makes you think I went sober?" He was like, "You're in AA, right?" I'm like, "What could possibly make you think I'm in AA?" He's like, "Your tattoo." I'm like, "You know what? I dare you to make less sense. I am still not tracking what you're talking about." And then he goes, "Dude, that symbol is the secret symbol for Alcoholics Anonymous."
Oh my God.
I was like, "Wait, what?" He's like, "Yeah, have people been asking you if you're a friend of Bill?" Like, "Yes." He's like, "Yeah, that's the founder of AA. That symbol is on all of their sobriety coins. They think you're in AA because of your tattoo." It's like, so it wasn't my buddy setting up this big prank. It's just alcoholics outing themselves because they think I'm in the club.
Oh, my God.
That makes so much more sense. So now people will come up and go, "Hey, are you a friend of Bill?" I go, "Oh, I know why you're asking, and it's not that. I got this tattoo for martial arts stuff. Sorry for the confusion." And they're like, "Oh, okay. Have a good day." But once this lady just screams it, "I'm not an alcoholic," and storms off. Just out of nowhere.
Wow.
Out of nowhere. She's just like, "Hey, you're a friend of Bill?" I'm like, "Oh, I know what you're asking. It's not that. I'm not an alcoholic." And like walks out of the restaurant, and everybody's looking at me like I'm the asshole because clearly I did something to offend her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And more adventures in miscommunication.
So actually I was trying to figure out what your tattoo was, and I realized I had an AA coin on my desk. So I picked it up. I'm like, "Oh, okay. So you have a triangle,
with a circle around it." Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah.
That's what it is.
Oh,
yeah.
I just see that bartender. "Are you sure?"
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm still excited from the show, right? My adrenaline is still going. So I've got about 2 hours after the show ends before I crash. And like, you sign the autographs, that's over, 2 hours starts. So then I go to the bar and hang out, and I'm like, "Yeah, this is awesome. Having fun." And then get back to my hotel room. And then just, tired. right? Then everything crashes. But yeah, dude, he would always just go, are you sure? And until then, it didn't click. I had no clue why, but now I understand.
That's hilarious. You actually have some pretty interesting tattoos. Because I remember last time when you interviewed me, I was like, does that motherfucker have a snake eyes tattoo? Like, I'm looking the whole time on video. I'm like, I'm trying, because you don't realize, like, you're trying to look over the edge of the laptop, like, what is
that? Right, yeah, you can see around the window. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This isn't a two-dimensional representation of a human being. That's a window into his living room. Let me see around that. And yes, I do have an Arashikage Ninja Clan tattoo on my forearm where it's supposed to be. But again, that's more adventures in miscommunication, because G.I. Joes stole that from the I Ching, and a lot of crunchy hippies steal it from the I Ching. So then I get these people walking up to me and be like, hey, brah, what trigram is that? Oh, and like, God. It's the 63rd trigram. It means completion, but it's not that. It's for Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, the ninjas from G.I. Joes, because I used to like to draw comic books. And that's what got me into art. And then that's what I went to college for, is painting, all because of comic books. So I have this tattoo not because I wanted to be a ninja, although I did. It's more my homage to art and design. But yeah, sure. It's for the I Ching, you idiot.
Oh, my God. So basically all your tattoos just represent misrepresentation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I've tried to choose things to be as confusing as possible. So that further supports my claim as being a perfect communicator. Being perfectly miscommunicating is just the next level. I take it to a whole other level.
I couldn't be more perfect if you planned it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just too stupid, really, sometimes.
Yeah.
Recognizing my own shortcomings is one of my strongest skills. I go, well, I'm not good with that. I'm not going to do that anymore. And making sense of tattoos is what I'm not good at.
Yeah. I actually have, like, all of my tattoos I have, all three of them, are designed by me, with one of them being like a comic character I created in high school called 40s, who's a drunken vampire hunter with squinty eyes that miraculously happens to look exactly like me. So people think I have a cartoon version of me tattooed on my arm.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
The Survival Punk logo is tattooed on me because that's how hard I believe in it.
Right.
And then on the other arm, I've got a skull and a cog that gets misrepresented as Gears of War all the time. And I'm like, ah, fuck, I did that to myself. Like, because I didn't know about the game. I just thought that, for me, it represents getting out of the grind before you die. Yep. Like, I don't want to work in the system until the day I die.
Exactly. Exactly.
See, my tattoos, they can't possibly be misrepresented at all. I mean, on one arm, I've got two Rubik's Cubes, and on the other arm, I've got the TARDIS from Doctor Who.
Nice. Nice. How often do you guys get
60s phone boxes?
I'm a connoisseur of old culture. Yes. How often do you guys get the well, if you didn't want people to talk about them, you wouldn't have gotten them in the first place conversation?
I have never got that. I only tend to get, hey, what is that? That's neat and different. Which for my website one, automatically throws me into, well, let me tell you about my website. Right, it's a walking like business card, basically.
I always just get, is that a TARDIS on your arm?
Yeah.
That's accosted by Doctor Who fans constantly, and I love it.
Yeah. Oh,
no, it's funny. This one time I was in a Walmart, and there was these two, I guess they're British foreign exchange salespeople. I don't know. But they're both for this white guy and this black woman, both from England, were trying to sell me Xfinity, I think. I can't remember what they were trying to sell me, because 5 minutes into the pitch, the one is like, oh my God, you've got a TARDIS on your arm. And the conversation completely changed to Doctor Who, and then somehow to Top Gear for like the next 30 minutes. And they just quit completely trying to sell me anything.
Which is awesome.
That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, the TARDIS gets all the compliments. The Rubik's Cubes basically just get ignored.
Yeah.
Right. Well, see, for me, part of it is that I try to avoid the what do you do conversation like the plague. Right.
Yeah,
because again, it's that whole mind reader thing. And now we're into the same pigeonhole every time. and most of my tattoos are centered around that. So I stole this from somebody, I don't even remember who, where they go, what does that mean? I go, oh, that's a tattoo you get in prison for killing somebody when they ask personal questions.
Nice.
Right? Nice. They're like, wait, what? So then I go, all right, you get to ask a question about one tattoo per year. That's it. So if you want to know about more of them, we got to be friends for longer than a year. But for me, it's just kind of like, well, these are kind of representations about times in my life, personal beliefs that that you're not paying me to share with you. So fuck you. So it just is kind of like, I didn't get these to start a conversation with you. And then people then why did you get them? I'm like, well, I didn't get them for your approval. And then I went, oh, now I suddenly get male entitlement and catcalling. Women don't exist for my pleasure. Oh, okay. And that was the day I kind of stopped being an asshole that way. Otherwise, wholeheartedly. But yeah, realizing people don't exist for my enjoyment was a huge hurdle for a lot of people.
Yeah. All right. To be respectful of your time, I've got some rapid fire questions and then you can go enjoy the rest of your day.
You got it.
Might be sleeping.
Yeah. This is the most interesting thing I'm going to do today. So you don't have to take it away from me that quickly. So
sweet. What is somebody's most interesting thing of the day?
Yeah.
That never happens.
So what are some of your top mentors that have inspired you?
Top mentors would be James Randi, the founder and creator of the Million Dollar Paranormal Challenge, as a direct challenge to anybody who claims to be genuinely psychic.
I know who you're talking about now. Yeah.
Yeah. I started working with him in 2003, handling applications and designing testing protocol for that challenge. So
sweet.
I saw all the ways that people were trying to scam their way to $1 million and thought, wait, I can do this better than they can. And that's how I built my show.
Nice.
So he's my top mentor. Another one is Bob Yetzi, who's my high school speech and debate coach, who basically lit most of the fires that have destroyed my life, which is awesome. So my burning passions and inquiry for knowledge and understanding how people navigate reality really started with him. So I'm forever indebted to him. Seneca, like from the Stoics kind of stuff, was a huge influence. Ip Man is a huge mentor of mine because he's the guy that
taught Bruce Lee.
Yep, taught Bruce Lee. And Bruce Lee learned half of the Wing Chun system and then was like, hey, let me go teach Americans. And Ip Man was like, you're not teaching those Western devils my life's work. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Chris Chan, who was learning from Ip Man at exactly the same time as Bruce Lee, stayed, learned the whole system, then came to America, opened the first Kung Fu school, and that's who my teacher learned from.
Nice.
So Kung Fu is the only system I've found of developing personal integrity on every metric for what it means to be human.
Oh. See, it's a good thing I didn't start with this question because you would have brought Bruce Lee, and then the entire rest of the podcast would have been on Kung Fu and Bruce Lee, and none of this would have happened.
Right, yeah. Well, Bruce Lee came up with Jeet Kune Do as a solution to the problems he was experiencing that he didn't get the solutions to in the second half of the system. So Jeet Kune Do is his idea of what Wing Chun would have done in these situations.
Sorry, I was looking around my bookshelf because I have the Tao of Jeet Kune Do on the shelf back there somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Along with a much better Bruce Lee's book, what was it? Expressing the Human Body. Such a good book. Which I found it odd that he really geeked out. Like, he was a genius level on like researching physiology and, you know, working out and muscle stuff. But then like he just didn't care about nutrition at all. He was like, Linda, go make me a protein shake. Like, I don't even care. Like, you just research it. You do that. I just want to work out. I don't want to know anything about nutrition. And it was such a weird disconnect.
Right. Yeah. It's like people that don't understand the important part that food plays in your well-being. It's like, yeah, this fuel, it'll combust. All right, that's perfectly fine. Let's put it in the car. Like, no, that's diesel, and your car runs on gas, and you need the right kind of fuel for the right kind of engine, which is why keto is so awesome.
Note to self, stop drinking diesel.
Okay. Yeah. I actually had a question on keto, but just for time's sake, because we're now over an hour, I was like, let's scratch that one off. Like, because I can geek out and talk about keto all day long.
Right.
Oh, yeah, we get started down there. We're going to be here for at least another hour.
But if you ever want to come back on, drop me an email, and we'll pencil you in for sure.
Damn, you don't Skippy. Even own a pencil.
I do own several pencils for drawing. Rapid fire questions.
All right.
Yeah, that was the first rapid fire question in 5 minutes.
So Bruce Lee is a very important part of my life, and I couldn't just let it go without saying anything.
Right.
Yeah. So what is some of the top advice you'd give people to be more awesome?
Practice it more, right? Just go create things. Stop consuming so much. Stop figuring out. Stop. Just go create something. Be an interesting person. Go be awesome, which requires action. We live in a universe of cause and effect, not hopes, wishes, and dreams. Mm-hmm. So those dreams are only useful insofar as you actualize them and put that potential into kinetic use. And that's the only way you're going to be awesome.
Awesome answer. Just fucking go out there and do shit. That's
right. Yeah, exactly. You said do shit.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm a child, but I can't let that one slip by.
I'm sorry. We're all part of the Beavis and Butthead generation. So, yeah, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
We just watched Do America again, like, what, 2 months ago?
For like, that was like the first time in God, about 16 years that I'd watched it.
Yeah.
Beavis and Butthead Do America.
And we still laughed our asses off.
Oh, we laughed the whole way through that damn thing.
Yeah.
Everything old is new again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want the last question,
yeah,
Mike?
Yeah, our last question. This one's a standard one we try to ask to all of our guests.
I am wearing pants.
Good.
Wait, was that not the question? Am I wearing pants?
Was,
oh, sorry.
That was not
sorry.
The question. Damn it, he is a mind reader. No. Okay. Here's the situation. You know you're going to be stranded on a desert island. Besides average survival gear, what would be one thing you'd want to be stranded on a desert island with?
Another person.
You know, that's a common question. That's a common answer.
Do you have a certain person? Like, are you taking Angelina Jolie with you or a buddy?
No, I don't want to be depressed all the time. Because I don't care how long we're on there. She's never going to lower her standards, so that's not going to work.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Her and Brad just split up, and she has no boobs now.
Yeah.
I have a shot.
Boobless, Bradless Angelina. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd probably say a mukjong, a wooden dummy, actually would be my number one tool to bring with me. So that way I could still practice Wing Chun and not get out of practice. Not that I would necessarily need it for fighting other people, but I absolutely need Wing Chun to stay human.
Awesome.
You know, we've asked this question to several people, and I'm still waiting for one person to give me the perfect answer.
You know what? Last interview I had, so we've got like the spouse, and we've got like a person and some other stuff like that. The last guy I interviewed, who was a vegan nutritionist guy in Canada, his answer was he would take his slack line so he could play with that. And I'm like, that's a good answer. Like, I don't know if you've looked in slack lining, but I kind of want to do it. Yeah, it looks just like fun and interesting.
You know what I would take? A boat.
A boat.
Yeah.
To escape.
Right.
Nobody ever says a boat. We don't have a caveat against transportation.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
nobody ever says a boat.
I saw on Reddit somewhere where somebody was like, I would take Michael Phelps and a gold medal on a stick and then just ride him to safety.
I don't know why. But
I think it would work easily well with a dime bag hanging out.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. When you said boat, it reminded me, I was listening to the last episode of Hardcore History with Dan Carlin, and he was talking about the ancient Persian, their favorite method of, like, death sentence. And I was like, oh, that's, like, what they do is...
It wasn't death by Chi-Chi, was it?
No, no, no. They take two boats.
Okay.
Death by Snoo Snoo.
What?
Death by Snoo Snoo.
Oh, my God.
From Futurama. Have... Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Crush that pelvis.
Snoo Snoo, yeah. I remember that one. So, yeah, they take two boats, and they put a person in the boat where their, like, arms and legs stick out, and then they feed them milk and honey to their full. Then they pour honey all over them. Then they put them in the boat with the other boat on top of the boat with their arms and legs sticking out so that insects come and eat them alive from the honey and milk all over them. And they go bathroom in the boat so it fills up around them. And I'm like, God, you guys are sick, twisted motherfuckers.
That's just horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that... See, we don't have that kind of... distraction-free environment where we can dream up things like that anymore.
No.
Right? We're so distracted with our devices and people. We don't get to just sit around and dream up fantastic torture ideas like that anymore. I miss the good old days.
Yeah. I was like, for good or bad, like, that's probably, yeah. There's still some sickos. But on that bombshell, it's been great talking to you, Jonathan.
Dude, thank you for letting me share my thoughts. Really appreciate it.
No, and you can come back on anytime, and maybe next time I'll get you to read my mind.
Yeah.
Trust Ooh. Me, it's a pamphlet.
Yeah. If you guess boobs or tacos on my mind, you're probably right like 50% of the time every time.
Right, so. Yeah. For the listeners and you guys, if you go to likeamindreader.com and go to First Lessons, I address that directly.
Nice.
Excellent. So yeah. Other than likeamindreader.com, where else can they find you?
A Life Well Designed is an easy way to do it. And if you want to kind of see the mind reader side of things, it's at Johnny Zavant, like an idiot Zavant, but with a Z instead of an S.
Nice.
So yeah, just Google that and I pop up. So most of those.
Links.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm on the Facebooks, the Twitters, all that kind of fun stuff.
Excellent. So, ladies and gentlemen, this has been our interview with Jonathan Pritchard. And for the Survival Punk Podcast, this is Couch Potato Mike.
This is James Sicklin Burnett.
And remember, a mind well read is a something I don't know. I'm making this shit up as I go along, and I feel really disappointed in myself today.
DIY to bin spoons, use guys.
Use guys.